And open the meeting.
And thank you. Is it
yep,
doing?
It's going.
Okay. So the minutes have been handed out from our meeting last time on September 25th. I have made a change on those that Megan Roth had emailed me about. Is there anything else that needs to be amended? Yes.
Yes, under my introduction, for example, we need to strike the board chair.
Okay. Okay, so with that change, is there anything else that needs to be reviewed? You had okay.
Said, I'm an enrollment broker, and that just strikes that, and I'm an outreach counselor.
Outreach counselor, okay.
The company I work for is an enrollment broker, but anyway, I'm not sure.
Okay. All right, any other changes that you've noticed? All right, then with those changes, after those are made, do we have a motion to approve those?
Motion to approve those changes.
Okay, and second? Okay, Teresa, so that'll pass with those changes. All right. And then, Dr. Bailey, we'll let you go ahead and open the meeting with your presentation on mental health and district supports. He, Dr. Bailey is our Executive Director for Behavior and Student Supports for AISD.
Thank you. Ms. Brumley, you said we have 2-3 hours?
You have 25 minutes.
Oh,
25 minutes.
No, thanks for inviting us to share a little bit. I'm just going to kind of introduce our behavior and student supports work in Abilene ISD and the real knowledge and expertise Sierra and Rosie are going to share here in just a minute. But this framework that's up here reflects really, really centered around behavior supports, and if we think of mental health as a communication within behavior, it makes sense that would be under our realm. This is my first year in this position, and it's a little bit of a newly imagined position to really try to align our behavior supports, including mental health supports, within the district. And so this is the framework of that. And as you can imagine with this type of framework, there are layers of support, and starting with tier one that we have with behavior coaches that support really every student in the district by supporting teachers at the classroom level and creating an environment, a culture of inclusion, a culture of support through classroom management strategies and that kind of thing. And they are, if you don't know Wendy Moreland and Susan Pearsall, they are amazing. Ladies that do that work throughout the district and do it very well. At the campus level, there's a little bit more intensive support from our behavior support liaisons, and these are folks who have a caseload of kids. Whenever the classroom behavior management or supports for students is maybe just not working and kids need a little bit extra support, that's really where these folks come in. And they will work lots of different strategies to support students in that regard. And they, when that still is not working or students aren't responding well to that support level, then that's when our behavior coordinators come in. Sierra and Rosie are two of our four behavior coordinators at tier three support. And that's all in the general education setting. So, and then if the behavior support is really intensive, that requires specialized instruction or individualized instruction, then we refer for special ed assessment, and that's where you see that tier four support come in. Along that continuum of supports, our social workers and our school counselors are helping in all of those areas. And if you think of this framework really more as 3D, I know it's not, but every student on within that framework receives those classroom management, those tier one supports, and then everyone from tier four down to tier two receives those supports. So we're trying to support kids at the most inclusive level with their peers that maybe don't have the same needs that they may have. But we want the whole goal of this entire thing for us is to keep kids learning, right? To keep kids in class in the least restrictive environment possible, so that so because we know that that's where they learn best. Along that way, you know, in the instructional side of it, certainly is how kids grow, right? And there are many challenges. I'm a recovering middle school principal, and so as you can imagine, that's quite the developmental
age.
He
has mental health issues.
Indeed. It's really great to see kids grow, especially through that that transition in life. And Rosie and Sarah are going to talk a little bit more about how supports look through that. But again, if you take all of these the words behavior support, you can really interject mental health support into this framework, because it really does go hand in hand with the communication that students are giving through their behaviors. So that's all for me. You all take it away from there.
So we're going to talk a little bit about how our mental health support in the district is offered through three different lanes. One lane is behaviors on the ground in classrooms, one is during a crisis event, and one is through what we offer to teachers and staff, knowing that an adult-first perspective is we have to have adults well and healthy to serve students well. And so I'm going to talk about behaviors as a reflection of an unmet need. And some of the behaviors that we're noticing in classrooms right now are aggression, verbal, and physical. And all of this is within the scope of this structure right here. And typically, 85% of students are going to fall in that tier one spectrum where they are going to be successful with what is happening by a classroom teacher. The offering of nurture and connection and structures and the routines, all of those are going to meet the needs of 85% of students. But 10 to 13 or 14% are going to need some additional behavior support. And that is where we are seeing some of these behaviors of the aggression. Eloping, running out of a class, hiding under tables, just outright defiance, work refusal, frustration and shutting down. So we see those behaviors, and then we're looking at what is their unmet need. And we're looking through the lens of, are they trying to escape something? Hard work, pressure. Are they trying to get their attention needs met? They need attention. Is there something tangibly missing? Food, sleep. And a device is really a key component right now, is that we notice that students are really connected to their devices. And if they don't have it, they have that kind of withdrawal symptom that leads to a behavior. And then we have sensory issues that might be a result. Within that scope, then, we're going to start looking at what is happening. What's happening, not what is wrong with this kid or what's the matter with them, but what is happening. And that's where we kind of have a mental health perspective, where we start looking at what adverse childhood experiences might have occurred in this child's life. And there are anywhere between 12 to 14 that I generally cover, and Sierra and I generally look through that lens. When we get to the top 2 to 1% is where we step in as behavior coordinators, and that's when their behaviors are impeding their ability to be in the classroom. And so when we get to that point, we are looking for the abuses and neglects and the conditions in a home environment that might limit them from developmentally growing. Their brain development might be inhibited because of certain things that have happened. And when that happens, their behaviors are erupting, and sometimes that is a sign that there is some sort of mental health instability. Depression often creeps in, even at these really young ages, anxiety, stressors that they don't have words for. So their behaviors are an outpouring of what we would say is, I'm just stressed out, but they don't know what that means. They've lived it from such early ages that they don't have those words, so their behaviors are what they offer.
So we would step in at that point and offer intervention for the family. Again, through that social worker perspective and the counselor perspective, we would pull those in for a family intervention. And then we would be looking at what are their basic needs that their behaviors represent, and what can we do to intervene to support them so that they can be in class. Does anybody have any questions on what that might look like? We utilize the behavior support liaisons at that point because they're on every elementary campus, every middle school campus, and we can, I think I have 5 or 6 campuses. Sierra has all the 2 middle schools and all both high schools and
the elementary school.
2 elementary. So we're working at the top 1-2%. Raymond has 6 elementary schools. And then our behavior support coordinator for SPED is working in all the staff classrooms. So as coordinators, we can't be the hands and feet, but we can do some assessment work and we can do intervention and planning through RTI. And it sounds like behavior, but we're always looking for that there is a part of their brain and their emotional needs that is probably underdeveloped, and we're going to push in and offer that. Sierra's going to talk about crisis response and some of the work we do with adults.
So along the lines of, well, I don't know if we mentioned this, but Rosie and I are both LPCs, licensed professional counselors, and so we use that lens when we work with our behaviors, but we also are able to intervene and offer support in a way that happens kind of in an immediate or kind of in a crisis. So with our students, we have, when we have situations that happen, I mean, just a couple weeks ago, we had a parent who committed suicide, or when there's a tragedy, I mean, I could, y'all know the situations that I'm referring to. Rosie and I are able to work with our school counselors and our social workers to be very mindful on how we approach these situations and how we explain them, how we manage kind of the ripple effects that happen when there's tragedy. We know that these adverse experiences affect so much of our system, our sense of safety, and so we take that really seriously. We try to handle those things with care. And on a side note, we do a lot of training along the line of our own mental health and our own brain development. And so while we are working with adults and we're teaching the, you know, we're offering these presentations to schools or to admin or whatever it is, we're trying to help grow the understanding of how our brains develop, at what times, and then when these things happen during those developmental periods, how it looks. I think the more that we all understand and learn brain development, the better we're going to understand behavior and et cetera, et cetera. So for crisis situations, one of the things that Rosie and I, when we first started out in our positions, we were like, we're gonna see everybody. And then we were like, well, can't, we're not very good at that. So there's a lot of need. We're not running out of need. So we try really hard to be, well, we will always be available in those really hard crisis times. And we do a really good job of partnering with our social workers and even in the community to get them the long-term care. And then, you know, just supporting the school or the people around the situations. And then also we are available to adults or faculty, staff, administrators, teachers. When the way we kind of frame it up is when what is happening is inhibiting them to be able to come to the classroom and be safe or even just do their job in some ways, that's when we want to step in and see if we can kind of lessen, we say like lessen the pressure, the intensity around what's happening, and then get them established somewhere in the community that can kind of take on that care. Those pieces of our job are under the license, so it's confidential. We don't report, we don't talk about who we see or when, and all of those things, just like in y'all's practices. You know, they have their confidentiality. And so I mentioned the trainings and all of those pieces. When I came into working in mental health or even behavior before this role, there was so much emphasis on learning what is happening in our classrooms and behavior. And I think that what I've seen is the pendulum kind of swing, because we are understanding we're seeing a lot of behavior, we're understanding a lot of mental health needs, but I think now we're at the point where we need to do something about them, right? So we can't just educate ourselves and then not have an action plan. And so we are a system of education. Our goal is to, you know, equip students to be able to be
in the class.
And just graduate and move on with their life however they see. But we're not a mental health facility. there's a lot of needs, but I think that just learning that role and that that's our main focus can really help distinguish when we are involved, when we're really in the middle of it, and then when we need to ask for help in our community, and when we need to say, like, this is kind of outside the line of what we can do in our system. So I think I covered this too.
Yeah, and so one of the things that we thought we could talk about is a little bit some of the strengths that we have as a district. AISD really put an emphasis on mental health, hiring a couple of LPCs and reinforcing our ability to push into crisis situations, and so that's been helpful. And we do have the opportunity to speak to different campuses and share that lens of these are the hard things your kids are going through. Mm-hmm. It is not viable for a teacher to know all the hard things that 22 kids are going through, but of the top, 10%, even that is hard. They are teaching. We can get some information and support them, and social workers can push in. So it is a really, the district has done a great job, and the downside of that is there's never going to be enough. The issues are pervasive. We think it's 10 to 15% that are exhibiting the behaviors, but some of the hardest ones are the 85 who don't have the behaviors, who are sitting in classrooms, and they need to be identified because there is something happening with them. But because they're not disruptive, we're not getting to them. And so one of the things that we really like to emphasize is a trauma-informed care approach. And that is a system of seeing, it is an education of the system that says we see all people needing to be honored and respected as having a story. And we don't have to know their story, but we would treat all people with confidentiality, with safety, with respect. We would have trustworthiness amongst the relationships that we are offering in a school environment and administratively, and then we would be collaborating with them to work on their behalf and serve their best interest. And that is something that would require an entire system approach, and that is an administrative effort. It has to come from the top down. We can implement it within a classroom setting, but if that classroom steps outside the bounds of what that classroom nurture is, then sometimes that feels unstable. I say in so many situations, what kids really need is to be able to trust the adult world. And how does that happen? It comes through expectations and accountability. And so when we have teachers that are having expectations and we're holding them accountable, they go, oh, even if I get in trouble, I know I'm going to get in trouble, and I can trust this system. But when everything is different, that creates instability. It feels unsafe. And that's what so many experience at home. And so when we're looking at the challenges that AISD has, it really is, how do we create awareness and education across the system so that all students, all teachers, all staff, all administrators are seen as having a story that is worth being honored and kept sacred and safe. Mm-hmm. And so we're doing that individually, and we're doing that in pockets, and as we approach a more pervasive experience with students with behaviors and adults with hardships, that's probably where I could see the greatest effort going. It's a real trauma-informed care perspective. Mm-hmm. And that would require us having strong relationships with external outside resources. Those people that we could reach out to in the community and say, we've identified an issue and we need help. And this is going to be a relationship that you can trust as well. So,
are there, I'm wondering what patterns you all are experiencing that show any large pockets of skill absent from students, like that are, we've got behaviors happening. Mm-hmm. Are there trends that you're seeing of like these tend to be the skills they don't have? Like we surveyed our middle schoolers who are new to Title I, and we asked the families like what kinds of training would you think would benefit you as a family. And they came up with, they talked about communicating with my team, like, mm-hmm. can we stay talking?
Yeah.
and the other one that we heard mentioned a lot in our surveys was conflict resolution. Mm-hmm. So what I'm, you know, like, those aren't things that are really in our curriculum necessarily, but are those consistent needs that you see students lacking skill in, or are there other things that are kind of rising above that for you?
I mean, I'm speaking completely out of my own, like, subjectiveness, but I know that this is something that won't surprise anybody, but I think when you look at just how much screen time we all have, right, it's not just about what that does for the brain, but what we're lacking in exposure to outside of that. And so a lot of what I see, I mean, to the degree of, like, a fiending addict, we have students who just don't have their, our brains are, you know, getting, yes, and so when they're on a screen and they have the dopamine that's releasing and then that's taken away, it's really hard for them to figure out how to kind of regulate their body, and that looks 100 different ways. Mm-hmm.
But it feeds into that deficit of, like, how do I interact with you when I'm doing this? And mm-hmm. I mean, to their credit, I feel better doing this too. Mm-hmm. Like, if I have a rough day, this mm-hmm. is calming to me. Mm-hmm. And so they are really experiencing a positive payoff from it.
Yeah.
And the deficit that's coming from that is they don't know how to interact, mm-hmm. interpret tone, notice eyes. So by the time they've looked up, our voices have already gotten louder and our tone has already gotten more intense.
Yeah.
Certainly. And so,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, certainly that is true with the technology, but, and it's also true with pre-kindergarten social norming, right? So we have this whole cohort of kids that are in the COVID era at 2, 3, 4, 5 years old that didn't get that that typical social norming that we would prior to kindergarten. And so we see these extreme behaviors in kinder first and now second, even into third grade, of that cohort of students who don't know how to communicate. And part of it, I think, certainly even at that early age, is the technology part, but some of it is just the shutdown that we didn't do in that year and a half of COVID, which is so, I mean, y'all can talk about the brain development, but it's fundamental, right?
I, one of the things I get really passionate about, and I know that there are physicians in the room, so, like, I want to learn from this, but I've been reading a whole lot about ADD. I feel like ADHD is something that I have, it comes out of my mouth literally 7 times a day with families, with parents, not because I think, oh, everybody has it, but it's such to me, that those behaviors are so different than when I was growing up, even learning about, like, not being able to fit into the classroom. Right, you're just hyper, you need to run, or you should do spanking, right? all those things didn't work, but there's just such a prevalence of this brain dysregulation and how it comes out in their inability to regulate, to focus, to move from one emotion to the next. And so all of that looks different depending on the kiddos, but similar in that sense. Definitely see a trend. And I mean, I know that it's not I think, like, 10 years ago, everyone was autistic. You know, it's like everyone's learning about these things, these diagnoses, but I do feel like there's so much of an inability to regulate that.
And co-regulation happens from an adult. you can't regulate unless you have co-regulated. Mm-hmm. And when I have done trainings on technology, the grandparents will come and say, oh my goodness, my kid is nursing and not looking at their kids. They're looking at the phone. So it's not just kids with devices. It's adults with devices not tuning in to what's happening in front of them. So it's that co-regulation piece and then finding the communication pieces to express themselves because they don't have anywhere to set a timer.
I was just about to say, we could continue to go on about this for an hour, but we don't want to take Mrs. Camp's time. So any quick questions before we wrap up? Thank you for giving us the opportunity to visit. Please, like, these ladies and the other coordinators are brilliant people. I learn from them every day, all day. Mm-hmm. So please reach out if there's a way that we can be a resource to you all.
Speaking of addiction.
That's a good segue.
Well done. Well done.
So I'm going to talk to you today about something that I never imagined would be in my job description. So when you get into the education business, you don't plan on being a nurse or knowing anything about it.
No.
So one thing that fell under the student services umbrella this year, I guess it's new this year.
It is new this year.
Oh, there's a new person in there. We will give her this.
she doesn't know any better.
Yeah. are some of the legislative updates that came down the pipe this year. So I'm just going to kind of talk to you about some of the new ones that happened this summer. And then, you know, the way it works with the state is they say, hey, we're going to make this happen, and they give it to us July 31st, and, you know, school starts on, and they think we just, you know, plan overnight and it happens, when really, like, we need a full year to plan for this. So a lot of our policies are not in place yet because, number one, we wait on TEA to give them to us, and these were passed this summer, and TEA still doesn't have those two yet. I'm really shocked. But, and so we kind of roll with it until we get them from them. So anyway, so House Bill 3908 was that we are going to add fentanyl prevention and drug poisoning awareness into our curriculum for our kids. So health teaks are what a lot of our drug awareness education falls under. There was nothing on fentanyl, and so we had to come up with something really quick because they said all students had to have this in grade 6 through 12. So they also told us we were going to have a fentanyl poisoning awareness. So we did that. And so it was during, you know, River Week.
So you come.
I mean, it's true. So we just kind of. Mm-hmm. So what we did this year, in coming years, these will be part of our health teams. But, you know, we can't redo all of our, you know, curriculum. So, in a matter of weeks. So what we did this year is we had Betty Hardwick come in, and they did some assembly-type situations with our 6th, 7th, and 8th graders. And then our 9th through 12th graders, they did more small setting. You can't put all of your freshmen in an assembly. That would be like high school principal's worst nightmare. And so it's in a classroom setting. It is more of a video style, which is not the best presentation, but this year we're kind of trying to make do. So so that is what we did this year. High school will be doing that in January. All of 6th grade, 7th grade, and 8th grade are completed. We also, in that, we also incorporated another bill that we had. I'll talk about in a minute. was this one, 629. This was came out of the Senate. And not only did we, this was included in our fentanyl awareness of just, Betty Hardwick actually showed them how to use this. And so I know that Angela got the opportunity to train every nurse, every trainer.
Yes. Yes. We've implemented throughout all of AISD our nurses, every clinic has Narcan, as well as every trainer, athletic trainer carries it with them in their go bags. Our SROs also have Narcan available, so we've all been trained on that and have watched the video that was the high school students will watch as part of the training. It's a pretty comprehensive video, but it talks about fentanyl, the effects of that, and then how to reverse it with the Narcan. So, but the video that the high school kids are going to watch is really a well done video.
It's
that,
actually from Sorority House. Mm-hmm. They may be called something else now. But so this is one of those that we're still waiting on the procedures and the policies from the state. But basically, we had to create it, a policy on how we're gonna, where we're gonna have it, how we're gonna dispose of it, all those things. And then how do we report it, that type of thing. Kind of along the same lines that we do with our asthma medication.
And our EpiPens as well.
And our EpiPens, that was new for us. This was really the big one. This does fall under my department, I feel like. And so this is much more right up my alley to talk about than the other. But so this is House Bill. What they changed is that... if it is a felony, which it has to be a certain amount, that it is now mandatory DAP and discretionary expulsion. So that what's different is the discretionary expulsion. We have not typically expelled students for having THC. That there are a large number of students, believe it or not, that have that. And so our goal is to keep children in school and educate them and not kick them out. And so that is one difference. I will say that, you know, we don't see a lot of joints. We don't see a lot of weed. We probably have seen, I would say, less than five situations this year with that. It is mainly the vapes. And the gummies. The gummies is a thing. I got a text today. It's just... the gummy, and honestly, I mean, I would probably buy it just by looking at it. I mean, it looks good. And there's this little bitty print on there that says what it is. So
we'll scratch that from the recording.
I will say that.
What you're saying is you can see how the packaging appeals to you.
The packaging appeals. It is very much geared towards kids. Which is very
warming.
Yes.
And intentional and warming.
It is. And, you know, I never thought I would have to have the conversation with my own third grader of, you don't take a gummy or you don't take a fruit snack. You know, kids share snacks. That's what they do. And, like, you can't, you cannot do that. And so, okay, so there's that. Possession of vapes and e-cigarettes. So they also said, you know, they love to make rules and say, here's what's going to happen. But you don't have any money to do that with. And so they said any kid that has a vape is going to go to a DAP. Well, that's a lot of children. And our DAP would be bigger than our high schools. And so so we are, yes, it's true. It is unfortunately true. So we did a District of Innovation Plan. We amended our District of Innovation Plan that where our kids that have vapes, just nicotine vapes, they actually, it's not a mandatory DAP because the facility cannot hold all those children. We do not have the staffing to hold those children unless we pull all the teachers from the regular high schools. So this is the district. We had to come up with a, we came up with a matrix for the District of Innovation Plan. You have to have a matrix, and so this was our matrix. This is what happens. We know that ISS, DAEP, suspension, whatever it is that we're giving these students, if they, for example, when they came back in August and they were truly addicted to their nicotine vapes, they it's not going to make them quit. It's going to die with us. And so we took the education route. They are having to do some education. The parents as well are, they don't have to, they are getting to, if they come for the intake meeting, they are getting to watch some things and see some statistics and really just, and I'll be honest, a lot of the parents that that I end up speaking with, which is usually the unhappy parents with the situation, they truly don't understand where they got it, or you know, they're, or why they're doing it, or they're not asking the hard questions of their own kids. And so when you get them in those meetings with the parents and the students, and I'm not asking those questions, it's very sad and eye-opening that the parents weren't aware of some of that. And so here's kind of where we're at. APD, their philosophy, I guess, or kind of what they're doing in the schools in Riley and Abilene is that the first offense when they are caught with a THC vape, they do not give them a charge. They do not arrest. They see it as an education type setting, and they give them a warning, obviously contact parents, and we follow it as if it was like they go to statutory DAEP. Now, the second time, that is when they are getting a charge and getting arrested. And unfortunately, that's a lot of our younger kids that it's happening to, by like 11 and 12 year olds. And we've seen it in elementary school as well. And so that's when we're starting to expel them. We have expelled middle school and high school kids this year. And I kind of wanted to give you some of our stats. Over 50% of our DAEP students are THC based. I think it was around 63% before Thanksgiving. I mean, that's almost all of our kids. And those are mandatory. And so they are there if they have THC. It's about the same number as last year. So one thing, I think the media called one day and they were like, they got wind that the legislature was doing this, and they were like, how bad is it this year? And we're like, it's not any worse than it has been. That is why the state is kind of putting some of these things in place. And so it's not really a ton more than last year. What we are seeing more than last year is we're now expelling kids because that's what the state is saying. And so when they're getting charged that second time, they kind of get a freebie the first time, and they go to DAP, but the second time they are having to go to and that's usually for 180 days. So that's usually for the full school year. So that is life-changing. I mean, that is truly, it's hard. They're in extracurricular things, which a lot of them are. They're not getting to do those things. They are, they're not allowed at TCLC, Taylor County Learning Center, they're not allowed to do a lot of their extra, like their electives, because they don't offer them. And so, we have a kid that, you know, was going to graduate with his welding certificate. And so now he's going to end up being, you know, he's not going to be able to get that welding certificate. And so it's just, it's hard. It's like, which is good, you know, it's getting their attention, but it's just sad. So that's why we're doing a lot of our prevention stuff, a lot of education. We are really trying to kind of help them understand what this is doing to their bodies and their life. So, what questions do I have about that?
Am I correct in that the SROs are also doing a video that they're going to talk about the consequences of you know, what's a felony, what
does
this...
That's one thing that...
Because I don't think the kids know that.
They don't understand that this little bitty, if there's this much in their vape, like, that's a felony. That's like having three bags of marijuana, like big bags. They don't understand this little bitty concentrated stuff is so much. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, we have put together a video where we are talking about some of our coaches doing it, the SROs are doing it, to really educate them on, like, what this little bitty vape does and how it can change your life and really the consequences mm-hmm. for it.
So. It's interesting to put together the concept of brain development and what mm-hmm. they really don't even know that they don't know with what is out there and available to them. I live with one who had an e-cigarette who then told me I wasn't trying to get addicted. Like, you know, just like doesn't understand that you can, it's not about like you try to get addicted or you don't try to get addicted.
I'm going to go get addicted.
I mean, like, you know, it's, and I think... And that's a, yes, and that's a, at 14. So I'm thinking, you know, the 10s and the 11s who are finding things because they don't, they're available to them.
Yeah.
They're available. They can pick them up in their home or they can get them from somebody older or they take it on a dare or because they don't have that filter that says, ooh, that's probably a bad thing.
Or a friend that says, hey, if you sell these 5 for me,
uh-huh.
I'll give you, you know, $10, $20 a pop,
yeah.
that's a lot of money for a middle school kid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so then, you know, that's where they're getting them. They're getting them mm-hmm. from each other.
Yeah.
You know. So, yeah. It's a, I, you know, I bring the good news.
So you said we've had people that are, kids that are getting expelled for THC. What's the recidivism rate? I mean, are we seeing effect of the education campaign, or
I had a bunch of numbers on here and I was like, that's a lot of really specific information. So I'm gonna take off. But so out of that, let's say 63%, about half of them are repeaters from last year. So I mean, that's the thing, is like once they're in high school, it's too late. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why we're really trying with our 5th and 6th graders, 7th graders. That's where we've got to really stop. And educating the parents mm-hmm. That it can happen in elementary school. That's why, even though it's really uncomfortable to talk to my 4th grader about this stuff, like she's 9 and like, innocent and young, and like it's either me or somebody else is going to teach her. So
it really does tie together when we have these parent conversations about behavior and at a young age, and the parents' willingness to, you know, intervene in a very big way when they're younger, when they choose not to get them what they need or the resources they need, kids are going to cope. And so then we have another problem.
But that sitting in the meetings with the families that don't know, that don't have that awareness. So we have several different programs, like a K-1 transition class. And one thing that the parents have given us feedback on is that they don't know what to do. And they want to know from us, the experts.
Yeah.
Big old quotations there. What can we do? So we're working on pilot, like figuring out how to get the information to them. Do we do a blog? Do we do little videos that we send out to those particular families? Do we get where we are translating what behavioral practices do we have in the classroom that can go to the home and be practiced at home? And it very much is, kids didn't come by it. They live in a very self-centered world where they're just taking in adult information and trying to make sense of it. And so it is up to us to educate adults along the way. But again, our goal as the education system is to have kids in class being educated. And so some of our periphery roles are going to be, how do we educate parents along the way to help their students stay in class?
Well, it's such a different world than we grew up in, with the technology. And even I feel like, even with the
you know, it's probably kids that smoked at Cooper High School. I'm sure there was, mm-hmm. and, you know, I'm sure even...
Even back, you know, but, grandparents' age,
right,
but
there was a
few.
Section.
It,
yeah. Right, that's true.
It was fewer.
But it was very, yes, much, it is, yes. And I, even being in education for 20-something years, walking into our middle schools and high schools and seeing that's where my kids go to school, it's shocking. I mean, it's just shocking. And so I just think it's, you know, it's hard to accept as a parent. So, you know, if the parents aren't around that, knowing what our kids are, you know, immersed in daily, then it is hard to acknowledge that it could be my kids.
Yeah. So, do you guys utilize the Taylor Alliance for Prevention or anything, what used to be our product?
Yes, yes, that is... Yes, we have. They are the ones who gave us.
They gave some. Yes.
But they have a. Because you're talking about ways to educate them. They come into the parents' ideas, like where the, how and where the kids will hide their banks or whatever. They have to set it up. It has to be at a place, so it could be like a middle school or high school during the PTA meeting. But
oh, that would be
they
awesome.
Can. And yeah. It gives them that. They go through the little tour and it shows them. I mean, it kind of rants all the kids because they see it time and time again. That's our plus limits for anything else and so forth. They see those places and it's clean.
Our middle school principal would probably love that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Cindy Frazier is the one who retired to. And she's in.
It's like yeah. This is a problem that is equal across a lot of districts across the state.
Yes. Mm-hmm. 100%. Yeah. That's, I think, why.
Yeah, I wouldn't think it would come out in the law unless it was.
Yeah.
And I don't know that it's just Texas, it's nationwide. Yeah.
So, like, associate, I mean, we just have a lot of Title I schools, they have a lot of
right.
Schools. I don't know if that.
So, you know what I.
No.
Actually, you know,
no.
Believe it or not, it's not a lot in our socioeconomic and that's what's even more sad. Sometimes it's like, it's, you know.
It's just lack of supervision and however that looks in their home.
Yeah. Well, and kids are going to be kids.
Yeah.
Like, they are learning. They are pushing those boundaries. They are, you know, it's very hard to you know, we do the whole just say no, but it is very hard to just say no when
yeah.
it's your friends. And you want to fit in. And so, no, I don't, Wiley's having the same problem, if not worse.
I used to work at Serenity House, and a lot of the drugs that were purchased and resold were coming from the south side of town. I mean, it's not a, like, it's not concentrated to one area, I should say. Like, it's very much a global.
So I'll give you this little piece of information, only because they, you know, we were kind of joking with them about it, and they were, it was all good fun, but. So we had some administrators from Wiley come over, and they wanted to watch some of our expulsion hearings because they'd never done one.
Mm-hmm.
And they're having them expelled left and right. And so that was in September. And that's one reason our SROs, you know, APD got together and said, whatever we do here, we're going to do there. And so that it's not, you know, but yes, they are seeing it. I mean, I know. We are. It's just why I don't know, but that is the cool thing. I don't know what the cool thing was when I was in high school, but it's just they think it's easily accessible. It's not that bad, you know, because it, you know, it tastes good. It looks appealing. Everyone's doing it. It doesn't make them feel that. The body, they don't feel that different in their body, and so I don't know why, but it is just, it is rampant.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier than a cigarette, I guess. Back in the day, we didn't want to, you know, maybe.
You don't
smell
like
you
don't
stink.
Yeah. No, it
mm-hmm.
actually smells wonderful. And
yeah.
so, you know, that is what, that's another thing, is we really trying to educate our teachers, our SROs, educating our teachers on what it smells like. Used to, it was like, what does weed smell like? Well, now you can smell, still, a THC vape is going to smell, but they can make it smell pretty.
Mm-hmm.
But educating them, like, what is it going to look like? It's not just what we consider a vape to look like. It could look like a highlighter. It could look like, they have hoodies now
mm-hmm.
that you can, you puff or whatever, inhale on the little string, and then you smoke it out in the hoodie. So there's just so, it's our marketing.
What do you say? So we're getting the uniforms back.
So, I mean, it's just so accessible. It's so easy to hide, and it's just, it's really fast.
Thank you for being the chair.
My joy.
Thank you for speaking and imparting your knowledge.
You're going to be in charge of doing this. You're like, I don't
know
what that means.
Yeah. I got you.
Yeah, you do.
But I am thankful that our district has won or pushed for the Narcan to be in the clinics. Because the law is that it has to be in grade 6 through 12, but it's in every campus. We have even our pre-K, even our babies, our adult ed, they have, we've pushed it out to every campus because it could be, you know, you don't know who it's going to be that's going to need it. So that's one thing I'm thankful for. And I was able to get the free Narcan through a program in San Antonio, so, and I believe that'll be easy to renew, you know, when we need more, so hopefully we don't use it, but it's available if we need it, so.
So these two topics came up specifically because of questions that you all asked at the very beginning of the season, when we said, what topics do you want to see come up at SHAC, and so we'd always appreciate your feedback. If this sparks questions for you, if you go home and you're thinking afterwards questions, send them in to Angela or me, mm-hmm. and we can either reconnect with people to get you the answers or schedule a follow-up for a future agenda, because the goal is to gather input. I mean, I love the suggestion of the resource that we didn't know. You know, like those are the ways we capitalize on the perspective and the expertise that you bring to help the district make the best policies and practices for students to keep them healthy and in school so that they can learn. Grab cookies on your way out.
Yes, grab cookies. Thank you. We're going to adjourn this meeting, and we'll see you again in a couple months.